Welcome to Two Guns and a Mullet. It's a Superman podcast where we dive deep into the artists and writers behind the Man of Steel. For our first two-parter miniseries, we'll be going over every Superman story written by Alan Moore, starting with today's Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. This is our first episode, so please give us a follow and let us know how we're doing. These will be spoiler-heavy discussions because we hope to dive into the nitty-gritty of what makes these books tick. If you want to keep up with our discussion, next week we'll be reading Superman Annual number 11 and DC Presents number 85. This episode was originally supposed to cover all of the Alan Moore Superman comics, but after going for an hour talking about Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, we decided it'd be best to split this into two episodes.
Alan Moore really went out of his way to put a cock in Superman's mouth.
Really?
No.
Did I miss that one? Is that
you missed that one? Did you not read? Oh my god!
I didn't read that one.
You missed the Darkseid issue, and it's like
the Darkseid,
and
Dark Side.
It's like has a winky face.
Yeah.
Darkseid, because he's got a dick in Superman's mouth. What a horrible way to start!
This is the Two Guns and a Mullet podcast. It's the Superman podcast. I'm Cassie.
I'm Brianna.
Today we're going to be talking about Alan Moore. Kind of a pilot slash premiere episode. We're going to be going through writers and maybe artists, maybe editors too. I have some ideas for editors to look at. But we'll do a little mini series on people. But we figured start with Alan Moore because his time on Superman is four issues, so it's pretty easy to break down.
Not a lot.
Yeah, not a lot.
It's very simple stories.
Yeah, I think that's honestly what I like about them.
Like, they're so, like, they feel like just like an idea and then like executing on an idea, or like, I don't know. It's very fun.
Yeah,
I like them.
I think one of the things that really stands out about it for me is that all of these issues don't feel like someone told him to make a Superman story. They feel like, you know, he's not just writing a Superman story. He's writing about the time Superman had this happen to him or this happened. You know, there's a lot of Superman stuff out there where it's just Superman fights fucking Kryptonite Man and, you know, they punch each other for a while. Yeah, there's no real duds in here.
I fucking love Kryptonite Man. Kryptonite Man is amazing. What a fucking psycho.
You wanna get into the first one then? The first one in the trade?
Yeah, sure. But it's Whatever Happened to the Man.
Yeah, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. What do you know about this book? I'm wondering if you read the foreword or not.
The foreword? Was that like, there was like a part
yeah,
of,
and
like
you
a lot of
immediately
text, and I
was
like,
went over it?
Man.
Yeah. Really, I figured.
I want to see green. I want to see Kryptonite Man screaming. I want to make a man green.
the foreword kind of just breaks down how this book came to be, and it's a pretty unique time in Superman's history. This book was made where for the first time they're fully rebooting everything, and this is supposed to be the last story of the Superman who has been around for like 50 years. You know, that's the conceit of it.
Oh, really?
Now this is kind of undermined because they make a big point that it's an imaginary story, but then Alan Moore also says, but aren't they all, which is true. So I take it as it's just the last Superman story for that guy. It's imaginary. Did you not read the other bit of text on the first page?
This whole shit was real. Honestly, huge sweat off my back. I'm so glad Brainiac isn't real. That guy's fucking horrifying.
Yeah.
That's the scariest shit. I fucking hate when there's like a little... okay, we'll get to it. Okay. That shit would fucking scare the crap out of me as a kid.
I skipped the forward, and then I got into the return of the fearsome funsters.
Yeah, well, that's the cover
like
of this
insane
issue.
Insane first
sure.
page.
Or at least one of them. I think there might have been. Yeah, that's the cover of that issue. And I think it's really cool how it's kind of like this kind of cover for it. It's one of those ones where you have Superman in the middle, and there's a statue of him, and you have like all the things that are going to happen in the issue. And there's six things on this one, which is the Rampage of Bizarro, the return of the Fearsome Funsters, the killing of Clark Kent, the new Brainiac Luther team, the Daily Planet's last stand, and the Legion of Superheroes last salute.
I hate the Legion of Superheroes.
Okay, some people would get very mad at you for saying that.
They're like the worst part of some this whole thing. They're like so weird. Also, I love that the statue of Superman is just a big Superman. Like, it's completely just him.
Yeah, it's not even gold.
Yeah, it's just
it's a, like...
I like to think it is just Superman. He got big and just stays there now.
But so this book was written as like the last Superman story. And the way it came about initially was the editor on the book, at first his plan was, you know, it's 1985, 84. And at this point, Jerry Siegel is still alive, who's the guy who, you know, one of the people behind creating Superman initially. And so the plan was like, okay, we'll just get the guy who did the first issue to finish it here. And that way it's kind of like a neat little ribbon on it. And then like they went to court and they couldn't do it because, you know, this company owning Superman, while this, you know, this guy, Jerry Siegel, is probably deserves way more of the money from that creation than like investors. So I'm pretty sure he was just fighting for like what he kind of deserved, but it happened to coincide with when this book would be written, and that's why Jerry Siegel isn't writing it, which kind of sucks. But instead, after all this happens, the editor who was trying to get this book made, the last two issues of Superman, sits down with Alan Moore at a convention, I'm pretty sure, and just goes like, God, I'm trying to find the right person to write this Superman book where it's the last one. And the story in the foreword is that Alan Moore stands up, like they're having breakfast together, and he stands up and he grabs him by the neck and says, if you let anybody but me write that story, I'll kill you.
What the fuck? Psycho.
Yeah. But this is kind of... I think this is going to be like kind of a theme of the episode, really, is that Alan Moore's admiration for superheroes. There's a big theme with him currently where he fucking hates them. He thinks they suck. But
yeah.
These Superman stories, I think, are really like emblematic of the fact that he didn't always think that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I thought, like, the whole thing with Watchmen was that it's just, like, a complete, it's just a complete deconstruction of that shit, and this feels like the most, just, like, earnest pure
version of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels entirely earnest.
Mm-hmm. That's really, like, what's really odd, too, is that this was written around the same time Alan Moore wrote Watchmen. Which is odd, but, really? You know, yeah. This Watchmen was partway through when Alan Moore was put to write this book. And at that point, he'd already written the other superhero stories we're going to talk about. The Swamp Thing one and the annual number 11 with Mongol. So, you know, at this point, it's kind of, I think it's sort of a transitionary period for all of comics. And this one kind of story about the end of this version of Superman is really Alan Moore going, all right, so this is how things are going to go from here on out. Crypto's going to die, okay? The fun dog, yeah. He's dead.
Yeah!
Which is, you know, the whole conceit of this book is that, like, Superman's villains start being a lot darker and a lot edgier. And we see that at first with Bizarro. And it would end up being right, you know? You look forward to the 90s, and a lot of these kind of dumb, gimmicky Silver Age characters like Toyman, Prankster, Bizarro stuck around a lot, but most of them, they've kind of disappeared. And if they haven't disappeared, they're now mostly bit characters, where their bit is that they kind of suck.
Yeah, they're jokes. They're, yeah. Like, they now exist so they can be in Harley Quinn and say penis. like, that's their only... That's where they are sentenced to.
Oh. It's like the modern-day version of the Phantom Zone. Superman loads up his Harley Quinn gun and sends you to say penis, cock, and balls on the Harley Quinn show. Fate worse than death.
Ooh, sorry, you have to say fuck in the new James Gunn movie, and then you die. That's like that's the only thing you do now.
Damn. I think, you know, as far as deaths go, I think a James Gunn death would be fun. You know? You get to have your head popped like a ripe cherry.
Yeah, yeah. Or you get like stepped on by a big starfish. It's a good way to live. I think it's a good way to go.
Yeah. But so we start the book with interview happening. It's kind of like set in like after the story takes place. It's got Lois Lane, got a new husband, and being interviewed for the Daily Planet. She kind of just acts as the narrator. I kind of really like the interview sections, and it's only for like really small dumb things. And by dumb things, I mean when Superman comes back and he's a complete doofus.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, I completely forgot about that. I didn't realize that was Superman. I was reading it and, like, Leia looked at the Wikipedia and was like, oh yeah, that's Superman. And I was like, what the fuck? I was reading him in my head with a country accent. Like, that's how I thought he was...
I mean, Superman's from Kansas. It could be a country accent.
I hate him so much more. I hate him so much more.
We need a live action Superman who's voiced by like Matthew McConaughey or something.
Did you see that gross baby in the interview section as well?
The what?
There was a gross baby at one point. Hang on. There's a disgusting little baby face there.
Oh, of course. Yeah, the little baby Jonathan, is it?
It's like, it looks like it's dying.
Yeah, the art on this book is done by Kurt Swan, who was like artist on Superman for like 30 years, which is why it looks very, you know, you mentioned earlier that it seems like a very earnest book. Mm. And that's because it is. This is a guy who's, you know, kind of been a defining voice in how Superman looks and how like his stories feel. And, you know, this is kind of his send off. So really, I think you're a piece of shit for making fun of Kurt Swan's drawing of a baby, you know, really.
I don't know. To me, I think it's important for Superman to look like shit and sort of garbage.
I love Kurt Swan's version of the character.
This art is actually really good. Does he do all three of these stories?
No. I forget the writers, the other ones. Writer's Alan Moore, the artist for the other ones. I know the second issue is actually... The first issue is inked by George Perez, you know, Kurt Swan did the pencils. And the second one is done by, name's escaping me. George Perez is the guy who made Teen Titans into like a popular thing. Well, before it was kind of just like, this is where we put Robin with a bunch of people you don't care about and you buy the book because Robin's in it. Kurt Schaffenberger was the guy in the second issue.
You made up the name.
Yeah,
that's
I did.
A big man. Yeah. Ah, shit, what's his name?
I took Schaffenberger out of my ass.
Shit, what the fuck is it? Forrest Gump is the writer of the third one, I'm pretty sure.
But Schaffenberger was an inker on much of the Silver Age of Superman, which this book was ending. So even though he, you know, Kurt Swan and him both were really like... important figures in Superman's history, but they never actually had an issue where Kurt drew the book and Schaffenberger, whose name I immediately forgot because I was focusing on Schaffenberger being his name, he never did inks over Kurt's work, but he still was, you know, inking Superman in titles like, you know, Superboy, Supergirl, Krypto. And some other Superman issues, but he never actually did any work with Kurt's art. So this is like, as the last issue of Silver Age Superman, it is kind of
two very important figures in that period actually collaborating for the first time, which I think is really cool.
Mm. I think I really like, I feel like some of them have like their strengths and weaknesses. I like the first story's art the most, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of likely because this is the prime of George Perez's career. George Perez also did Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was the reboot that actually led into this. So he's like, he's top dog at DC at this moment. You know, he's rebooting Wonder Woman, he's rebooting the Teen Titans, and he's making them way more popular than they've ever been in the history of their of the comics. So,
is he green? Like, what's he doing?
I don't know what George Perez is up to nowadays. I don't think he's making comics. I'd assume he's retired. I know Marv Wolfman, the guy who did a lot of those books with him, is no longer active as of like 2 years ago or something. I know that he did like a Cyborg comic, which was kind of crappy, and ended his career on like a very low note, which is kind of sad, but like, you know, it kind of happens to all these artists, especially, you know, if they stay in the business. Alan Moore was smart and he just started living in the woods instead of making comic books.
Starting casting chaos magic.
Yeah, he always was crazy. Doing that. That's the thing. He's actually into that stuff. Yep. Him and Alan Moore and Grant Morrison are both pretty into, you know, the occult. And I think there was at one point there was some sort of documentation that they were in a like psychic war.
Fuck yeah.
Both. I think Morrison would win. They have a lot more. I think they spend a lot more time thinking about that kind of thing, about magic and stuff. But yeah. Well, I think Morrison would have won because they're still, you know, they're still making comics. But then again, Moore is, you know, the most famous writer ever to put a word on a comic book page.
Just get shot. There's no psychic war. You can just kill them. Like, they could just kill each other.
I don't.
Does Bizarro die? Is that what happens here?
Yeah. Yeah. So. He started the book, Bizarro shows up, and he's going fucking nuts and he's killing people, which is not a normal Bizarro thing. Normally, he's just kind of a fun little pest who goes around and messes with Superman's day, you know? And his whole shtick at this point in history is that he does the opposite of everything Superman does. And so he wants to do the more opposite than he's ever opposited before. He's going so opposite. And he just starts killing people, wrecking shit. And then he takes out blue kryptonite, which is the specific kind of kryptonite which does not hurt Superman, but does hurt Bizarro.
Of course.
And he fucking kills himself.
On purpose?
Yeah, he does.
Good. I don't know. That seems like he sucks. All right.
I really like the way they started with this because it's such a severe escalation and you kind of immediately get what's going on because it's such an insanely, not basic, but cartoonish character. And for him to off himself on panel, I think, you know, that's really great stuff.
Yeah, to kill people and then kill himself.
Yeah.
I think more than the other ones, this has like a really good vibe. Like, it feels so ominous the entire time. Yeah. Like, I guess it's just knowing he's gonna die.
That's one of my favorite things about it.
They do a good job of making it feel really just weird. Just like everything is everyone knows it's the perspective of someone knowing what's gonna happen and just seeing the events unfold. It just feels so ominous. Then, like, little action figures attack everyone. And it's crazy.
You know, we have little goofballs to show up, which would be Prankster and Toy Man. And they come in, they kill Clark's childhood friend, and they attack him with little drone Superman action figures. And it's great. It's just wacky. And it's wacky in a very Silver Age kind of way. where this is like the kind of thing that happened in Silver Age comics all the time. But now just, oh, Pete's dead. Okay. It's taking the super, you know, that super goofy, child-friendly story and just going, okay, here's the actual consequences of these things.
Yeah, I also like the little Superman calling him a moron. Just like they're antagonizing him. You little faggot. And then they kill his best friend. I hate those two guys. Fuckster and... Wait, what, Toymaster? What are their names? Prankster and Toymaster?
There's Prankster and Toyman. Prankster's the guy in a green suit. Toyman's got glasses and a purple and blue suit.
Well, yeah, of course. I wouldn't expect Prankster to be the purple suit one. That'd be insane. Obviously, green suit one is the Prankster. He has a little flower on his thing.
Oh, yeah, that's just one of his classic pranks.
And he has a pizza bow tie.
Where he goes up to Superman, and he squirts a little water on him, and he goes, eh, I gotcha, and that's his whole plan.
That rocks. Except in the Alan Moore comic, he walks up to a pedestrian, points to his flower, and it's actually a gun, and shoots the person.
Yeah, that's just Joker, you know?
That is fucked. That is just Joker. God.
That's Joker's bit.
You can't do anything now. Everything's... You try to do anything, and everyone's like, oh, it's just the Joker.
Everything's taken.
And the Joker does everything now.
But then, like, the actual villain kind of pops up, which you think is the actual villain with Luther and Brainiac. Where at this point in the story, they mention that Terra Man, like, died. One, Terra Man died. Parasite died. Do you know who Terra Man is? I'm wondering.
You're saying two people, and I love Bong Joon-ho, but I don't know any of these characters.
Terra Man, well, Parasite's really simple. He's this big purple freak. Who, his whole thing is that, you know, he needs to consume energy. So he'll go and he'll consume people, like power plants and whatever the story wants him to consume. He'll eat it, you know? Terra Man is a cowboy riding on a Pegasus from space.
Fucker, that guy's dead? What?
Yeah. That's, like, one of the saddest things about this book is that I never got to see Alan Moore make Terra Man a literal murderer, you know?
Well, yeah, at least no, he definitely did.
Yeah, well, he tried to kill Parasite, and they both died in the process. So.
That rocks.
Yeah. But then we have Brainiac and Luther. Brainiac's just a little head. Apparently, Superman, like, disassembled him. And now he's just a head lying around, and Luther picks him up and is, you know, I think Luther's a bit of a schmuck in this story, truthfully.
He's a schmuck. He is definitely, yeah. He immediately gets taken over and then is just slack-jawed, like, the entire time.
Yep. And I really prefer Brainiac as, like, Superman's biggest villain than Luther. Some, I think, you know, that's mainly because Luther gets 50 stories written about him every year, and Brainiac will be lucky to get one.
Really?
But, you know. Yeah, usually.
I guess it makes sense.
I mean, there was a whole... Yeah.
Like, you deal with Brainiac, and then he's gone, and then, like, he'll be gone for a while.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you
can
kill
him. You can put Luther in prison, and then Luther can just get out, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, you know? You can't really... If you want to get rid of Brainiac, you got to shove him in the Phantom Zone, or you have to kill him. You're not going to put him in, you know, Brainiac jail. It's not going to work.
All right, Batman, we're just going to put him in Arkham Asylum. I don't fucking know.
But the, so Luther's basically just a puppet throughout this whole story. I think they do kind of nail his hubris, you know, just thinking, yeah, I'll just get this big supercomputer that bottles cities and I'll be able to handle it. It'll work for me.
I love how he literally finds it and immediately is like, fuck. No. Just immediately turns on him. It's so fucking good. Also, completely, this shit's so scary. I hate how much he doesn't want to do it. Like, he's like, completely like, God, please, anything but this. It's so scary.
And then there's like, the whole scene with, him like having to get him to walk forward, and he's like shaking the whole way, and like Brainiac's just slowly taking him over.
It's so scary. I hate it. I hate it so much. This is, as a kid, I hated the Skrulls. I hated things that like took over people as a kid, or like pretended to be people. Those are like my biggest fears. Like the shit would terrify me.
So you're absolutely terrified of Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique, right?
Oh, it's so
sweet. You saw her with her big blue boobs and you were going, oh God, get it away from me.
Oh no, then I would be like I'd go nuts. If like someone I knew turned into a hot blue babe, I'd go nuts. I'd go crazy.
But then Superman's identity has been revealed by Funster, the Funsters, Prankster and Toyman. And Metallo goes to get revenge on his brother who died, which was apparently a thing back then. Nowadays, it's his brother who's the Metallo that's around, but they just try and fuck up the Daily Planet, and Superman turns the Daily Planet globe into a magnet and sucks them all up.
The dumbest shit.
Yeah, but that's like, I think, kind of the, you know, it's trying to be Silver Age-y. And even though this kind of stuff is running out of style at this point, it's meant to be a send-off to a very specific era of that character.
Yeah, I think it's actually really fun. I think it's like Superman just being like he's like, he can just do things. Like, he's smart. Like, I'll make this a magnet to get all the metal guys. It's like so,
It's weird. It's fun.
It's very cute.
Mm-hmm. But then we get to the real star of the book. The real star of the book shows up.
Oh, yeah, yeah!
Fuck yeah! Kryptonite Man joins the scene in his red leotard. He's glowing green the whole book. He's constantly emitting green. He's not just a green guy. He's glowing time.
He looks great. Honestly, he's glowing. I love him.
Yeah.
I love that his whole thing is that I thought it was gonna kill him. Brainiac's normally green. Well, Brainiac's normally green, so I thought Brainiac was gonna be like, I wanna be this guy because he's green. Like, I thought the whole comic was gonna be about getting Lex Luthor green or something.
I really adore Brainiac's plan in this book, where his plan is literally just, Kryptonite Man's a fucking idiot. I will get him to kill him. He can do it. He's just really dumb. Like, there's no reason a man made out of kryptonite can't kill Superman. I'm just gonna make it happen.
The panel of Kryptonite Man just shaking his fists in the middle of the city. Just like, I wanna fucking kill this guy. Where is he?
Yeah. Oh,
him just on Brainiac's monitor shaking his fists.
But Kryptonite Man was another one of those characters that would pretty much vanish from comic books as once this kind of era of storytelling left.
That's a damn shame.
Yeah, it's awful. I cry. Mostly he's kind of gone. We get to like the emotional core of the book, which is like the love life of Superman, where it really, you know, grinds to a halt for a while, and it focuses on Lana, Lois, and Harry White and his wife, which it's a very odd turn when it happens, when it just everything kind of grinds to a halt. But you mentioned how it like feels so ominous, and I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I think it's effective.
Is you have this whole night where they're just, it's a standstill, they're outside, they're like blasting the fortress. And they're just trying to wait it out, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really effective.
I really like the fact that Lana and Lois have, like, a moment together where they're like, okay, we've spent all of Silver Age comics being, like, kind of bickering adversaries. We've been, you know, trying to get with the same hunk of meat for, you know, whatever, 30, 20 years of comics. And they actually go like, okay, we can be rational humans for a bit. There's no need for us to despise each other because we both really like Superman. You know?
Yeah, but you know, women are always just so catty and they always want to fuck the same guy, right? Like, I just don't get it. It's obviously, I don't know. I think Lois Lane's a bitch. I think Lois Lois Lane's a bitch, and I think Lana is better for him. And I think that's...
I feel like you're the only person to ever think that thought out loud, because I don't think anyone really likes Lana more than Lois.
Look, and everyone's wrong. I don't know what to tell you.
And we get to the part of the book you said you didn't like, the Legion of Superheroes.
No, this is fun. These guys just suck. They're so lame. Like, also the Legion of Villains that show up fucking suck. They're so like,
we're like goobers, and we have shitty outfits.
And the fact that they're also assholes. Like, they bring someone that is dead right now to Superman.
Yeah, Supergirl is, like, freshly dead also. Like, she died, like, you know, in Crisis on Infinite Earths, and then this happened.
So she also left when they're leaving. They're like, anyone else think Superman looks, like, kind of fucking, like, weird? Like, he looked like an idiot today? And it's because he's bawling his eyes out. At the end of it, I remember
That's Lois talking. He looked like Lois talking.
Oh, okay.
Lois is saying that she didn't hear about the Legion of Superheroes. I thought that was... But something upset them.
Also, I hate Green Man with blonde hair. Is that
Brainiac 5, I believe? There's a bunch of Brainiacs. I think it's Brainiac 12 or 5.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Is he the same guy? No. Like, why is he Brainiac?
He's like a descendant or something like that. Truthfully, I'm not too well-versed on the Legion because there's... like a million of them. Okay. Yeah, they kind of suck in my opinion.
Yeah.
I get the appeal.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on. No, I'm taking a stand against the fucking, you know, the authority on comics. All the fucking people who love these schmucks. They suck. I don't know what to tell you.
Brainiac is cool. I like this version of Brainiac. I think the problem with the Legion of Superheroes for me is that if you were to look up an image of the Legion of Superheroes, there's 50 of them. There's always, like, way too many bodies because it's, you know, this group in the future of superheroes when, like, the world has already been redefined by them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, what's the world like in, you know, 10 centuries when superheroes become commonplace, kind of? And I think Brainiac is really cool. I really liked him on the Supergirl show, which I don't want to admit I watched.
You watched it, though. You watched it like a fucking sick freak.
Yeah.
You watched Supergirl and you loved it. The thing about
Supergirl is that there's one good season and I think it's really good, and the rest is bad to okay. And I think Brainiac is one of the only really great parts of that show. But then we get to see Superman cry. He just sits there with his dog and he bawls his eyes out.
It's nice.
I think that's one of the best parts of the whole issue.
It's a good moment.
The fact that it ends the issue on that.
That's some good shit.
Then we get to the second issue. We get introduced to Thomas Elliot, I think his name is. I know. Is it Thomas Elliot? Jordan Elliot. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's Jordan, yeah.
I was name-dropping a Batman villain, Hush, there, who's called Thomas Elliot. His name, Jordan Elliot, is a reference to his Kryptonian dad, Jor-El. And that's something I want to bring up later as well. Mm-hmm. I will bring it up. Because there is, in the Swamp Thing story, he has another name where he buys the car under a fake name, and it's Cal Ellis.
Cal Ellis.
And I think there's a lot of similarities between all these stories that really, you know, are small things, but I think are fun to notice. The main big one for me is lot of them are about Superman imagining things or their imaginary stories. At the beginning of this book, the narrator kind of says that, you know, this is an imaginary story, but aren't they all? We're going to get into a Swamp Thing issue featuring Superman that Alan Moore wrote later, and it'll be having him, you know, undergoing hallucinations and stuff, and it's all in his head, and he just kind of needs to chill out to get over it. And then the last issue is the annual number 11. It also has it has him, you know, spending most of the issue just kind of stuck in a dream. So I think it's kind of, I don't know, that's like one thing I noticed rereading all of these books at the same, at one after the other, is that most of them take place in some form of imagination, you know?
Mm-hmm. It feels like a lot of them are like making Superman powerless, almost. Like, that seems the theme is like...
Oh yeah, that is something I did notice as well.
Also, yeah. Like, he needs, like, he always needs help. I think, like, to any of the things that happen, mm-hmm. he needs, like, someone else.
That's true. One of the things about, like, making him powerless is that in the other stories, the Swamp Thing one and the annual, is he's mostly at the whims of other people because he's incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, he's powerless because his death is preordained.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's already seen people from the future come and tell him, well, that's it. You're done. And, you know, it's that sort of feeling of powerlessness where he isn't literally, you know, have kryptonite around his waist or something, but he's still, it feels like he's kind of depowered in a sense because you know that he's going to lose.
Yeah, because there's nothing he can do, reasonably.
Well, he figures it out.
Yeah.
Of course, he always does.
You don't.
We start the next issue with the introduction of the Legion of Supervillains. Wonderful characters. I did not know who these people were, that they existed before I read this book.
Hey, Brainiac, we want to beat the shit out of this guy. Can we help you?
Yeah. It's actually, I find it so, so funny that these characters are coming here knowing that they're going to win, and that's the only reason they're showing up. Like, as soon as things get difficult, they immediately leave. They're just kind of pussies.
Yeah, they're really fucking pussies. They suck so hard.
But we have Cosmic King, Saturn Woman, and Lightning Lord. And all of those are kind of swapped versions of members of the Legion of Superheroes. You have Saturn Girl, Lightning Lad, and Cosmic Boy, I believe. Or Cosmic Lad. So they're all kind of just polar opposites of characters you've already seen.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they pretty much do suck. They're kind of, their costumes are also way uglier than the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, for sure.
And I don't think their costumes aren't even that good.
I just don't like characters that can just show up and exist for no reason. Like, they just like, hey, we're here, right? And they're just lame.
Kryptonite, like, Man kind of just shows up and exists for no reason.
He's so cool. Like, he's constantly glowing and is like, I literally, one of the lines in the panels before this is, what's to consider? I want my hands around his throat. I want to watch him turn green and die. He just wants to make people green, which is what I think Brainiac wants. I think he wants him to make him green. I want him in every story.
Oh, you're going to be starving for Kryptonite Man content.
This
then.
Weird elf man. I'm going to mention him in every fucking episode. I'm going to be like, this issue ends pretty strong. I think Kryptonite Man's going to show up in the next one. If I had to bet, he's going
to... I'm wondering, did you notice in the on the page after, when they put up the force field and all the superheroes come to try and knock it down, if you notice that Robin and Batman are just beating the shield with two sticks.
Fucking rocks. Wonder Woman is just punching it.
Yeah, but she's got superpowers. They've just got sticks.
Who knows? I think they're trying their hardest. I will say, Batman and Robin suck so hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, their inclusion each time is so hilarious. Specifically in the Mongol one, but we'll get to it. It's just each time they're like, they feel like jokes, like they're not supposed to be here.
Yeah, I mean, Batman even calls Robin chum, you know? He goes all the way with it. So then we kind of have a, you know, we talked a bit about how Superman's story at this point is more so focused on picking between Lois and Lana, and that's been pretty much the thorough arc for a lot of Superman's history at this point in the Silver Age, is him deciding who his love interest will be, and then never making up his mind. And he talks to, like, Perry White, who's going through his divorce at this time, about it. And I think it leads to, I think, one of the saddest scenes in the whole book, which is when Jimmy and Lana, they go and they get themselves superpowers in Superman's fortress. Jimmy becomes the Elastic Lad, and Lana gets, like, Supergirl powers. And as soon as Lana gets superpowers, one of which is super hearing, she overhears Clark going, "Yeah, I gotta pick Lois, you know? I just love her so much more." And then Lana goes,
"Oh my God."
She flies out with Jimmy to go stop the bad guys because they want to defend Superman, and says, "Nobody loved him better than us. Nobody." And then she gets killed. She goes, she slaps Kryptonite Man around. She slaps Brainiac around. And then I believe it is Cosmic King, I think, has the power to, like, take radiation out of her body, which is what gave her powers, and she just gets vaporized. And then Jimmy gets killed. And it's all very, you know, it's very Alan Moore. It's very absurdly dark.
Mm-hmm. I think Elastic Kid deserved to die. What a gross boy. I hate looking at him.
You even got his name wrong. How dare you? It's Elastic Lad. It's Jimmy Olsen.
So creepy.
He does look so ridiculous.
Like, I've read 1,026 chapters of a little boy who can stretch, and none of them made me more unnerved. Like, there isn't a single time I've been this unnerved looking at a man, a little lad with rubber powers. Very gross looking each time. I do love that he gets shot, though.
You love that he gets shot.
Yeah, it is cool that he just gets shot.
Oh, yeah. It's the Silver Age story, but it's got this, like, dark layer over it where people just get shot, or people, like, get, you know, irradiated to death and stuff. There's this great moment where Brainiac's body grows unconscious because, you know, Supergirl, the Lana Lang Supergirl, hits him. And he's collapsed, and the Legion of Supervillains starts, like, freaking out because they're like, "What do you mean? Our victory is assured. We're just here to beat up Superman, which should be easy because we decided to come on the day where we knew we would win." And now Brainiac's fucking dead, and he just wills Luther's body to keep walking, and he's just barely moving. I don't know. I think that's so creepy. And you mentioned earlier that
it is really creepy.
Also, it really, really insane that the last story with this version of Luther, he dies without even, like, noticing. Like, he's not even in charge of his body.
So Luther's just dead at this point.
He just gets slapped. Right. Yeah, he's dead. He gets slapped by Lana Lang. He says, he asks Lana Lang to kill him. And Lana just does it. She, like, karate chops him in the neck, and he dies. Oh, shit.
I didn't even realize that she just kills him. Like, Lex. Damn, fuck. Yeah. That's really good. This is... Okay, I love this part of the story a lot. I love just his corpse rising. Like, the expression. I guess this feels like the most... The darkest it gets, probably. And then, like, a dog attacks Crypto Man.
No, I think the darkest part is when Crypto attacks Kryptonite Man and he dies of radiation poisoning. That shit hurts. It hurts.
So why does Kryptonite Man die? I think that's sort of a misstep in this story, I guess. It's sort of a...
I think he got bit by a dog in the neck.
But, like, it doesn't...
You can see his green blood on the floor.
You don't see him get bit. You see, like, the dog barking. He says, Snoff, but I don't know.
I think Snoff is the sound of him getting bit.
I don't know. I'll say, you know, I never trust a death that happens off screen. I think we might be getting more of this guy. You know, I wouldn't count on Kryptonite Man.
Yeah, Alan Moore comes back to comics and he goes, "All right, guys, I'm doing Kryptonite Man."
I wouldn't.
It's happening.
I wouldn't count Kryptonite Man out just yet. I'm just saying. Keep your heads up. We're getting more of this guy.
God. It's so sad. But you skipped over one of the funniest parts of the whole book, which is the base gets blown up. Perry White stops his future ex-wife, you know, they're having a divorce, from getting killed. And they go like, the line is, would you take me to my room, perhaps? Perhaps we'll have time to make up for being so stupid in, like, getting their divorce. And the implication I got from it is that Perry White and his wife are going to go fuck while Superman dies.
That rock.
They're just going to wait it out.
Anyways, you know, like...
And that's how I read it at first, and I have trouble reading it any other way.
That's clearly the intent. Just, like... Well, I mean, I guess you, like... Do you want to go, like...
Do you want to, like, get out of here?
And then the dog dies. And then the dog dies, and, like... And the howl is really sad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a very good page. The coloring on it is amazing. I'll say that.
It is. I love... I can't believe Kryptonite Man gets mauled by a dog. What a fucking... Oh.
Good stuff. The more I talk about this book, the more I find I love it. Because we're getting to the very end. And the very end, when you get that reveal, it's amazing. But before we talk about that, I do want to mention the page after Crypto dies. There's this whole bit about where they're just kind of zipping through. The Legion of Supervillains fucks off. But you can see in the foreground of one of the shots, there's like a few Easter eggs. There's Titano, who's a cyborg gorilla that Superman fights sometimes. There's Nightwing and Flamebird, who are like superhero characters on Krypton. And then there's Lori Lamaris. Do you know who Lori Lamaris is?
No idea.
Lori Lamaris is Superman's girlfriend from college, and she's a mermaid.
Fuck! She's the fucking she's the fucking wheelchair mermaid! No, I know her!
Yeah. Yeah, and she shows up here, and I really appreciate it, because I think Lori is, you know, I'm one of the only people on this earth who legitimately want more Lori content. I do find it really fun when she shows up. I also just want more college-age Clark content, you know?
Yeah, I want to see Clark get into women's pants and fish pants, too. I want him to fuck more fish, I think is where I was.
Yeah, I want him to get into scales.
Yeah, yeah. I want him to... Honestly, I don't know. I think there's really a lot to dive into in the world of Superman fucking fish people. And I think that we should really explore the space and, like, sort of stretch our legs.
Yeah, I've got a book that I'm thinking of right now. I'll put it in, I'll holster it in the chamber. We might discuss it some other time. But I got a book in my head. It's by Frank Miller. It was published like 2 years ago. It's Superman Year One. There's a fair amount of fish fucking in that one.
Oh yeah, wait. They reference Nightwing and Flamebird as well. They reference Nightwing and Flamebird in the last comic.
Yeah, that's true. Mongol. That's true. The Mongol issue has a lot of fun references, and I do want to talk a bit about that as well. I'll get into it later. But we get to near the end of the story, and we kind of get the big twist, which is just Brainiac can't pilot Luthor's body because it is dead, and he rolls over and he dies. And Superman just goes, what the fuck? I'm supposed to die here. What's the deal? And then the main man shows up. Now, Bree, I don't wanna continue until you try to pronounce the Mr. M's name.
It's obviously Maxi Zipectal. His name
is Mixius Spitlick.
Don't you dare say it. His name is Maxius
Spitlick.
He will be Mixi.
And so Mixi is Spitlick, his gimmick. Do you know his gimmick? His gimmick is that...
I think I got it.
All of his stories...
He's Russian.
He shows up, he kind of... Just a bit of a rascal, and Superman has to get him to say his own name backwards.
What? How do you say his name backwards?
I don't know. I only know how to say it forwards.
I don't know. I love this guy.
Yeah, you love this guy. this version of him is very, very... Alan Moore obviously wants these characters to be more scary than they usually are. And his idea for that is to just make Mixie Spitlick into a weird creature.
I like his whole spiel of, like, I was a little bitch for a while, and now I want to be evil. It's so fun.
I love the line. There's a great line where he says, you know, I spent 2,000 years being doing nothing, 2,000 years being a good guy, 2,000 years being mischievous. I think I'll spend 2,000 years being evil. And maybe after that, I don't know, maybe I'll feel guilty about it.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so fucking good. It comes out of fucking nowhere, but it's fine because it's fun. And then he turns into just, like, I love the design. The weird fucking, like, almost a different style. It's really fun. It's also...
There's so much, like, black on him, and it's so dark. Like, your eyes immediately kind of draw to it amongst all the color.
Yeah, it's, like, completely out of the palette. And just, it looks like, I don't know. I love the weird sketchy shit around him.
I think it's, you know, it's a huge departure stylistically, which is why it really works. And it's the kind of, like, weird horror shit that Alan Moore was kind of doing with Swamp Thing. Although it's obviously doesn't have a horror artist on it. It has Kurt Swan, who's more in the Silver Age sci-fi stuff. But it's still him bringing that energy to this character who's always been very silly.
I do love their description of him, which is just like, oh, it was undescribable. It was tall and lanky and sort of wide. I don't know. Just like a normal person.
Yeah. Well, in the panel, he's like, about like three times. Yeah, in the panel, he does look.
They portray him pretty good. Like, he looks like indescribable. It almost looks like he's like the white around him is just the page under the art. Like, he's bleeding like the actual art away. It looks really good. I love I love the way they made him.
Yeah, and we end the story with Superman realizing that the Legion of Superheroes kind of give him a clue to use the Phantom Zone projector on Mixie. And so he does. And Mixie tries to leave by saying his name backwards. And he also gets sucked into the Phantom Zone at the same time and gets ripped in half. And, like, another really, like, kind of, like, it's a bit scary looking how he's getting ripped to shreds, like, atom by atom.
It's fun, though. It's like a... I love his face in that panel when he says his name backwards. Just, like, I don't know, the use of white around just, like, the complete blackness is so nice. And, like, seeing, like, a weird, like, spinal cord or, like, just, like, the tearing. It's so good. It's so visceral.
Yeah, and then the story ends with Superman climbing into the gold kryptonite chamber, which is the one that takes away his powers.
You hit me in the gut. And then he walks in.
Yeah, he's just so upset that he killed someone, even though it was a fifth dimensional imp who was saying, I have unlimited power and I've decided to be evil for 2 millennia, which would result in, like, you know, numerous deaths, like an unfathomable amount of death to happen.
What a pussy. Like, what an idiot. Like, what a fucking dumbass.
Yeah.
What if another guy comes up?
I really love this moment. I love the panel of him walking into the golden room. You know, it's really great stuff. And I think, you know, having the last appearance of Superman be like him looking back at the reader as he's walking away. And this is the last time this character will appear on screen in this suit, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's really cool stuff. Yeah, I think it really took advantage of it being the last Superman story.
Was this actually the last of this character, like this version of Superman? Or was there anniversary shit after that? Or, like, did he appear in other comics?
There's a few cases. There have been a few cases where they've kind of gone back on it. And I'm pretty sure it was Jeff Johns, who I've complained to you a lot about, I think. Writer of Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah, definitely.
Or he bought this version of Superman back, and it was very annoying to me because he bought back the specific version, not from the Silver Age, which this is supposed to be the last story for, but from the specific story you are reading right now, So he basically bought him back and said, oh, that's not, this is like another alternate universe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. It's, I get that there's the imaginary story header, but also it's very clearly his last story. That's how it was intended. And Geoff Johns has a big habit of kind of just doing whatever Alan Moore did again, but making it a lot worse.
What if we made like a hack universe? Like it's a universe where a hack wrote the story.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, yeah. I don't like Geoff Johns. From what I've heard, he seems incredibly hack. Also, it's like a pervert or some shit, right?
He's a racist.
Fuck yeah. All right, yeah. Never mind.
If you heard about sucks. If you heard about issues on the set of Justice League involving Cyborg, his actor, Ray Fisher,
mm-hmm.
he accused Walter Hamada, I think he's some high-level executive at Warner Brothers, and Geoff Johns of racism on set and wow. reducing, I think a line from Geoff Johns that Ray Fisher quoted was that they couldn't have Cyborg be angry in the movie because audiences wouldn't like to see an angry black man.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And now he's back to writing Stargirl. He's just back in comics because Wonder Woman 1984 flopped and the accusations with him as a movie producer are kind of killing his career in that department. He's still welcome to write comic books, I guess, though.
Oh, you can hide behind a page.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like... You could still... That sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. But then we finish up the book with more interview stuff. We kind of see the home life of this version of Clark, where he's become just a parent. He puts down his son, Jonathan, named after his Earth dad. And he crushes... The kid has powers and crushes coal into diamonds.
Yeah, it's really cute. Yeah. I like him winking.
Oh,
like him
closing the door. That's the best part. The best part is him talking to Lois. Lois going, we're going to have pizza for dinner, and afterwards, do you want to have wine in bed with me? And he watches Lois is taking off her dress, and he's winking at the camera and closing the door.
You scamp, you little fucker.
I really love this version of Clark at the end of the story. I really do.
Yeah. I think it's a good way to end his whole thing. Just like, oh, he loses his power. He has a kid. That's it. He's done.
But also,
I guess Superman
he's
is
sort of goofy. I don't know. He's so goofy in this bit.
He is incredibly goofy. Yeah.
And during the actual story, I mean, his death is coming, so it's very much warranted. But he's always so stressed and always so serious. Like, he never has any fun doing any of the things he's doing. You know?
Yeah.
And kind of just seeing like him relieved.
Crying.
Yeah. It's such a stark difference between what he's dealing with at this point in the story.
Yeah, and you get sort of glimpses at it throughout. There's like, he appears at one point, I don't remember when. I'm trying to find it. But like, he's so... Lois is like, ah, yes, you have the best nose for coffee.
Yeah, I was about to mention that.
It's like the goofiest shit. I honestly didn't know...
I love things like that. I think, you know, that's one of the things I also like about Superman and Lois is that they'll have Superman acting normal and then it'll be like, oh yeah, I can just smell everything, by the way. That's something that I can do.
It's really cute.
Yeah. Him having the best nose for coffee, him going on a tirade about how people without powers are the real heroes.
It comes across
as so fucking rude because they're talking about her ex-boyfriend who died tragically, freezing to death in the Arctic. And he's like, yeah, I'm the real hero around here. And like the interviewer doesn't go like, that's fucking insane, dude. He's dead.
They add an accent to the way they write his shit too, like for sure, right? Like he's like,
yeah,
say,
yeah.
Is that coffee I smell brewing? Like it's the most insane dialect.
God,
us ordinary working slobs, son, we're the real heroes. It's insane that it is just him.
Yep. I really love his haircut in this as well is something I really like. You know, him dyeing his hair brown, got the white streaks. He's a real, like, old man, you know?
Yeah, he's got the fucking salt and pepper. Just, like, not even salt and pepper. It's, like, fucking layered cake. It's great. I love him.
Yeah. That ending, I don't know. I think as far as ways to end a superhero story goes, I could not think of a more fun way to do it and a more, like, earnest way to do it. Because truthfully...
Yeah, completely, like, I feel like you can end shit with, like, sort of...
Just fucking dying, you know?
Yeah, like, resenting or, like, making fun of...
Yeah.
Like, a specific era of things. And I feel like this, like, I don't know, paying complete homage and, like, leaning into it and still sort of making shit that's new. Ending the story, I think, is probably the best part. Like, just actually ending it.
Yeah.
It's just really good. It's a really good way to finish, like, that character.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of this book. I mean, I don't think I was hugely into it when I first read it, probably, like, 2 or 3 years ago. But I think I've, one, grown way more attached to Superman as a character since then, and also come to understand a lot more of the Silver Age wackiness and, like, why it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I really love this book. And I love the art. I really do love the art.
Yeah, it's really standout. It's really good.
It's very cool to see them do character designs like, you know, the Kryptonite Man, for example, or the old school Martian Manhunter where he was a guy in his underwear, and me be able to look at it and go, yeah, that looks cool. That looks like a cool costume, because I don't think a lot of people really pull it off.
No, not at all. I feel like it's Kryptonite Man is just such a serious character, and I think it really is his arc. I think begins here, yeah. And I can't wait to see where they go with him.
Once he gets off the floor of Superman's fortress, where he's just been bitten in the neck by a dog and is bleeding out on the floor. Once he shrugs that one off.
We didn't see that.
No, you see him bleeding all over the ground.
That's spilled something or someone, like, I don't know, but we don't.
That's irradiated, you know, milk. That's all it is. The milk got too close to him.
I think, you know.
I think Kryptonite Man just peed himself.
He might have. And he might have, like, maybe he threw up because he was scared. I think he just got attached by a dog. Maybe he's passed out and threw up. But this is, like, the start there. You know, I think killing a dog is a good way to start anyone's story. And I can't wait to see more from him. I'm glad Superman's gone, though. I'm glad we sort of, like, it feels like passing the torch, sort of.
Went on a lot longer on this book than I thought we would. He had a lot more to say than I thought. Because truthfully, before I reread it, I remembered it as fun Silver Age thing where also Jimmy Olsen gets shot. That's what I remembered. And when we got back into it, I remembered that it kind of just rocks.
Yeah.
It rocks really hard.
You forgot that it was the start of Crypto Man in his story, and I think that's important. But we don't have enough time for the other two, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Oh, Bree, I can't wait to introduce you to Grant Morrison's run on Action Comics where Kryptonite Man is a wife beater.
Fuck! They can't have any man safe anymore! What the fuck?
Yeah. It sucks. I'm sorry. But anyways, we're going to cap the episode here. You know, we're going to cover Superman and Swamp Thing. We're going to cover that, the story Jungle Line, as well as Superman Annual number 11, which is the wonderful... What's the name of this fucking story?
It's for the man who has
everything. For the man who has everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course. I love this fucking book, and I'm so shocked with myself that I was blanking on it the whole episode. We're going to get into those next time. I had fun today. I hope you keep this up. I'll see how it actually turns out when I try and edit it.
I've been Brie Larson.
Yeah, you've been Brie Larson, and I've been Cassie.